we're very fortunate tonight to have Dr. Rajan Sankaran joining us. As I said, I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Sankaran speak just recently in Goa, India. So I'm sure most people are familiar with Rajan Sankaran, but let me just give him a quick introduction. Rajan Sankaran is the originator of the sensation method in homeopathy. His concepts such as levels of experience, vital sensation, and kingdom classification, and techniques such as following the energy pattern of the patient, working with hand gestures, and using doodles are now being taught and practiced throughout the world. He's authored more than 30 books, many of which are used as textbooks in universities around the and colleges around the planet. He's also co-created a homeopathic case-taking and analysis software known as Vital Quest. Rajan Sankaran heads the Other Song International Academy of Advanced Homeopathy, located in Mumbai, for clinical training, treating, and research in advanced homeopathy. Scheduled to launch in June 2011, this academy envisions the dream of integrating live clinical practice with academic training for homeopathic students and practitioners. His online forum, Wednesdays with Rajan, features a series of live and archived talks by him spanning a year and a half, which is accessed by more than 700 homeopaths from 43 countries across the world. In this series, he conveys the practice of homeopathic medicine to students and homeopaths, covering different approaches from the traditional rubric repertory approach and Materia Medica to his recent sensation method. A five-day seminar will be held in October 2011 in Toronto, Canada, called the Wednesday Summit. It will be a first-time experience never available to homeopaths, and it includes video footage of follow-ups continuously taken during the days of live practice with Rajan Sankaran. If you want more information about Dr. Sankaran or his work, you can visit his website, www.rajansankaran.com. That's spelled RajanSankaran.com. Or there's another website, which is www.onlinehmp.com. That's www.onlinehmp.com. And thank you so much. I know, Dr. Sankaran, you're very busy. You've got a busy practice and teaching schedule. You're writing books all the time, so we very much appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure.
So, Rajan, I thought I would start by asking, I know that you've been involved in homeopathy for a long time, but maybe some people don't really know the whole history. So could you start by perhaps sharing a little bit about what is your actual background in homeopathy?
Well, when I graduated from my school, I saw that my father was a very well-known homeopath, and he was one of the most well-known in this country and author of several books also. And somehow, just being with him, I saw very impressive results, and I was encouraged to take homeopathy as a career. And I learned a lot from him, because he had been all over the world. He was in London, he was in New York with Elizabeth Wright Hubbard and all the great homeopaths in London, like Sir John Weir, and he had a very solid background in repertory and Materia Medica and very traditional homeopathy. He himself was the author of some repertories like card repertory and pocket repertory. So he was a big inspiration for me. And not only did he give me the fundamentals of homeopathy, I remember when I was in the homeopathic college here, the only time he got to teach me was when he was shaving. So I would be sitting on the floor of the bathroom while he would teach me remedies or rubrics. This was very inspiring for me. And not only did he give me the fundamentals of homeopathy, but also he gave me the core values of life. That means to work, to think, to research, and particularly to excel, because he always said that the true joy of any human being is when he works to his full potential, when he really excels himself. The poet Tagore in India, he wrote, "When tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection." Now, this was the kind of value system that he inculcated in me. And he taught me to be open, non-judgmental, and to continue to research and develop all the time. And he gave me also the ethics and values which I now uphold. So this was the first introduction. And in fact, all his books I later put together in two volumes, which is entitled The Elements of Homeopathy. And these are those elements where he covered all the topics, starting from materia medica, repertory, case taking, no swords, every aspect of homeopathy. And these books have also inspired me a lot. So this was basically how I started.
Well, Raj, I heard a rumor. I'm not sure if this is true or not. Maybe you can confirm it for me or not. But I heard that actually Fatak was actually sometimes your babysitter. Is that actually true?
Fatak was actually my father's teacher.
Yeah.
And I was not very... I didn't know him too much before that. But when my father died, he wrote me a condolence card, you know, saying that he sympathizes with me. And I wrote to him back whether he could teach me. But by this time, he was more than 80 years old.
Hmm.
And when I went to meet him, he didn't have a practice because he was retired.
Hmm.
But I kind of... really begged him to teach me, and he agreed. And for the next 2 years, I went to him every week, and he would teach me. I would actually take patients to him so that I could learn practically, clinically, how he dealt with situations and how he used the repertories and the rubrics. And he became my second teacher after my father, and that was really a great gift, because this man was one of the greatest homeopaths I ever knew.
Mm.
And then there were my father's friends like Sarabhai and one Dr. Kanji Lal, who was the president of the Homeopathic Association of India. And later on, a well-known homeopath in Calcutta called B.N. Chakravarti, and also one from South India called Dr. Kopikar. So these, my father's very senior colleagues, became my mentors, and took almost personal responsibility to see that I was properly educated in the fundamentals of homeopathy, of classical homeopathy.
Hmm.
And each of them had a different skill, a different field of expertise, where Fatak was adept at the methods of Bogar and grand generalization, and had an artistic way of coining and using rubrics, as we can see from his repertory, whereas the others had other talents. And I learned from all of them the varied approaches that are possible towards case taking and prescribing.
So I see that your first grounding in homeopathy was really very, very classical, based on the writings of people like Hahnemann and Fatak and Haring and Kent. I'm curious, how did you develop the sensation method with this original background?
Well, just to add to what I said earlier, after I had been trained by these veteran homeopaths, is very solid, founded, fundamentally sound people. Then, in the later years, I was also very curious to see what the modern homeopaths did. And here, I came in contact with people like Dr. M.L. Sehgal in Delhi, who founded his own method based upon the rubrics of mind symptoms alone, which he interpreted in a very unique way. And then I came across Vitulkas, and I actually invited George Vitulkas to come to India to teach, and I organized two seminars from him in 1983 and 85, and these were very valuable seminars for me. And with his video cases, he illustrated very nice techniques of case taking and using the repertory and the materia medica. And later I also met Dr. Eugen Becker in Freiburg in Germany, who had his own unique approach with the use of mythology and fairy tales and dreams and dream provings. And I found my way to the clinics of these people, to the practice. And I think I just took whatever I could, you know, with the fundamental principle that was there with me. So while I was influenced by so many people and learned from so many, I thought, let me also think, what can be a way in which our results can be more predictable? Because I saw that homeopathy was brilliant, but oftentimes you were not sure. Sometimes the cases worked beautifully and sometimes nothing happened, and we didn't know why either of this was happening in the case. So I told you, since my fundamentals was repertory and materia medica, I started with repertory and I was working with this for a long time and with the materia medica. But there were limitations. And if I just stick to this and that's it, then it has become my prison. It's something that limits me. And I want to seek some method and some philosophy that produces consistent results. So together with my colleague, Dr. Jayesh Shah, we started studying cases of success and failure in our practice to see what can we see common to the cases that are successful. And what we found was that if we prescribed a remedy that was based on mentals and generals, it had a very high chance of success as compared to those prescriptions which are only based on local symptoms. And so we realized that disease is a holistic disturbance. That means it's something that affects the whole. And when you treat the whole, the results are better than when you treat the parts. So we came to the idea of something called a central disturbance. And this is exactly what our masters have said, you know, that mentals and generals are the most important things in a given case. Hahnemann especially had emphasized the value of the mental state in the aphorism 211 in the Organon, where he said, this holds true to such an extent that the state of disposition often chiefly determines the choice of the remedy. So we started studying the mind state, and slowly it became apparent that the mind is not just a collection of symptoms like jealousy or anger or grief, but it is a kind of adaptation to a certain perceived situation. That all the different aspects or qualities of the mind is reflective of how a person perceives and reacts to reality. And this led to the idea of delusion. Delusion basically means, how do you perceive reality? That's how I started using the delusion chapter. That was one more step. And then I found that there are different types of situations that can be perceived. You can perceive a situation as an acute one, or as a thing that is hopeless, or as something that you have to live with. And so there are different types of situations, and these types I equated with the idea of miasms. Later on, it developed that there were patterns of perception. A person can perceive a situation as a problem of structure. That means he has something or he will lose something. He wants a relationship, he wants money, he wants position, or he's losing it. Or he can see a situation as one where he's very sensitive, something affects him, bothers him, and he reacts to it. Or he sees the situation as one of competition and survival. The other man is victimizing me, I have to get the better of him. So we saw three distinct patterns in the way a man perceives a situation, and this could be equated to the three kingdoms, like minerals, animals and plants. Minerals having to do with structure, animals with competition, and plants with sensitivity. That's how the idea of kingdoms evolved. So the whole story of my development is one of evolution, where one step followed the other, and then it has come to the stage where while studying plant families, I tried to find a common theme. Let us say if it is a Loganiaceae family, what's the common theme between Naxomica, Gelsemium and Ignatia? And I couldn't find one at a mind level. Therefore, I had to think deeper and go to the level of sensation, which is both physical and mental. And there I could find a commonality, which is shock or surprise. So you have Ignatia, which is shocked or surprised by somebody's death or grief. Gelsemium, which is shocked or surprised by bad news. And Naxomica, which is shocked or surprised by a given situation or a loss. So then I understood that there is something deeper than mind, deeper than perception, and that is experience. And that is how I came to the idea of sensation. The idea of sensation has completely taken the whole thing to a really different level, because even now when we start asking patients, tell me about what's happening, so they say, well, I have a quarrel with my spouse. So we say, how do you see this quarrel? They say, in this quarrel, I see myself as a victim and the other person as somebody dominating or suppressing or pushing me down. This is at the level of perception. But when we take the case a little bit further and say, just describe to me in this situation of being dominated, of being victimized, how is the experience for you? How does it feel within you? And then they kind of just reflect back a little, meditate a little, go into it a little, and they say, I feel as if something is coming and squeezing me. And then a hand gesture is also demonstrated. Something is squeezed. Something is just squeezed inside of me. And that experience is the sensation. And if we get to that level, then we see a kind of direct link between the patient's expression and the materia medica and the very source of the remedy which is needed. And that makes the entire exercise very, very more, very much more predictable than ever before. And the results of this are so gratifying that one does feel like sharing it with colleagues of homeopathy all over the world. And I think this is the way it's developing, because it's not only me who's understanding this, but also people like Jan Scholten or Massimo, or everybody is kind of coming to the same conclusion that now we need to go much deeper with our remedies and with our patients in order that our results are much, much more consistent.
Very interesting. You touched upon this a little bit, Rajan, but I thought perhaps you could clarify, what exactly do you mean you know, because the word sensation is used, you know, Benninghausen says location, sensation, concomitant modality. So people might get a little confused. What is your exact meaning when you say the word sensation?
Well, it is not very different from what Benninghausen called sensation. It's the same thing. So in homeopathy, we have books called Sensations as if, or Benninghausen emphasizing sensation. And we have sensations in all our remedies, you know. So it's the same thing. But we understood the value of that sensation as an experience, something that is common between mind and body. For example, I illustrated it with the Loganiaceae family. We say shock and surprise is the sensation. So it's something that is common between body and mind, and therefore, by definition, it is holistic. It is not mental or physical. It is something that the entire organism experiences at a vital level. And therefore, another term for sensation would be vital sensation. It is something that underlies the expressions at body and mind. And thus, it doesn't split the two. And what you can do with the patient is, when you go into a certain physical expression like a headache or something like that, you know, when you go deeper into that, you will come to a specific experience or sensation. What is very amazing is that when you ask him about a stress factor in his mind and you dwell deep into that stress factor, he will again come to the same expression, the same sensation, the same experience. And then you know that what you are dealing with is something beyond body and mind, the deepest core experience of the patient. And what is interesting here is that when you reach that core experience, then the patient starts talking of a language that is not human, that is not human specific, a language that is equally applicable to a person as it is to an animal, a mineral, or a plant. And thus he, at that level, starts talking a language that is universal, and a language that connects the person to something in nature that actually is his remedy. So at that level of experience, the patient actually starts speaking the language of the remedy. And then it becomes so clear what he's talking about. I can give an example. You know, I saw a patient in Germany about 1 year ago as a live case in a seminar in Munich. And I asked her, like, for example, what kind of pain she develops. And she says, I have a pain that is squeezing, or a pain that feels very tight in my head. I feel as if everything is coming together, or I feel something in my chest and that I feel suffocated. And then I ask her, so to describe her state of mind, and she talks about anger. And I said, describe this anger that is within you. And she said, the anger is so sudden and it's so intense and it's so violent. I could just kill a few people without batting an eyelid, you know. And then I said, describe this anger, that what is your experience of the anger? And she said, I could just take somebody's neck and completely squeeze it, and squeeze so much that they would be completely out of breath and that they would die. So you see, in her headache and in her anger, you see exactly the same experience, the same gesture, the same energy. And this energy is actually not human specific. It's as if something else is speaking through her. And you will be very surprised that I had to give her a remedy, anaconda, which is actually a constrictor snake. And this remedy has helped her so much. If you just see the follow-up, the entire state of this person is so much different. She has lost, she was very obese, she was like more than 125 kilos. And in 1 year, she lost 25 kilos of weight, just without doing much. and her whole state of mind, which was so violent, all her physical complaints, her thyroid blood test reports, everything has changed so beautifully. So when you go deeper into a specific expression, you come to an experience that is common between mind and body, an experience that is beyond the human language. That experience is what we call as the vital sensation.
Interesting. You know, Rajan, one of the concepts in your method, which I think has been most difficult for me, is the one where you differentiate the qualities of the three kingdoms, the plant, animal, and mineral. Perhaps you could help us to understand how these are differentiated in actual practice. How do you know if you have to give an animal versus a plant versus a mineral remedy in practice?
Well, I mean, it is something that is quite obvious when you see just very common remedies in homeopathy. You know, suppose you take the mineral kingdom. If you take three remedies of mineral kingdom, let's say you take Calcarea Kab, you take Natrum Mure, and you take Baraita Kab as examples. And you start asking, what is it that is common that we know in these three remedies? So then you see that one of the themes that is common in the three remedies is dependence. Calcarea Kab is so scared, he's dependent upon other people for security. Natrum Mure is so emotionally dependent on the partner for love and affection, and this dependence easily gets hurt or disappointed. Baraita Kab feels so incapable that he depends on somebody else to carry him and for his entire livelihood, even small decisions he's not able to take on his own. So this we know. So we see that one of the themes of these three remedies that is common is dependence. And dependence basically arises from the experience of lack, that I don't have, and therefore I need you or I need your help or protection. So one of the qualities or the core essences of a person who needs a remedy from the mineral kingdom is the experience, I don't have enough structure within me, I don't have enough capability within me, and even if I have, I'm afraid I may lose it, and what happens if I lose it? So when you go deep within, that's the experience. Whereas in an animal kingdom, when we say take three animals like Apis or Lachesis or Tarantula, what do we see here? We see the main qualities as competition. We see the main qualities as jealousy, as violence, as impulsiveness, as attractiveness, etc. So survival, victim versus aggressor, is the main core experience of people who need animal remedies. Also hierarchy, who is bigger, who is smaller, who is the aggressor, who is the victim, who will live, who will die. And when we take three remedies, for example, in plant kingdom, suppose we take Ignatia, Pulsatilla, and Staphysagria, what is common here? We see common is the sensitivity. We know all these three remedies to be extremely sensitive and reactive. Staphysagria is so sensitive to insult. Ignatia, so much to grief and disappointment. Pulsatilla, so sensitive to rudeness, etc. So sensitivity and reactivity is the core experience of the plant. Now, if I would give you a very, very simple example, and I would say that a patient has, for example, disappointed love. You know, she was in love and this love was disappointed. Now, if she would be a mineral remedy, her experience of the situation will be, oh, I have lost something which I depended on. I had built my whole edifice of my life based on this person, and now I have lost it. So this is a loss of structure. Whereas an animal remedy would react, how dare he? How can he do this to me? And now that he has done it, I am going to take my revenge. How can that other woman be in any way better than me? I will show him. Whereas a plant remedy would say, I am in shock. How did this happen? It came as a sudden surprise. I was completely hurt. I was completely affected. I was crying. I was weeping. I was hysterical. So it was a kind of sensation reaction issue for the plant. So in this way, this is a very superficial way of saying things. But what I mean to say is that in any given experience, when you go to the depth, you will see that the person either experiences it as a problem with his structure, with his survival, or with his sensitivity. And that's what differentiates the three kingdoms.
Rajan, when you take a remedy like Agaricus muscarius, which is prepared from a mushroom, the Amanita mushroom that's on Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, one of the symptoms that's well known for Agaricus is a feeling of dependence. You find in rubrics like servile or dependent of others. How is that dependence different from what you describe with the mineral remedies?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. And this question we can ask in many different ways, you know.
Yeah.
For example, we can say we know the fundamental symptom of hyoscyamus is jealousy or shamelessness or sexuality. And this is very, very much, it looks like an animal. Or we can say phosphorus is also so attractive and so amative and this very much looks like an animal. Etc. You know, so you will find in individual remedies qualities of other kingdoms than what they belong to. Or for example, can we not say Natramur is a very sensitive person? Of course Natramur is sensitive. Who denies this? So the presence of sensitivity or the presence of attractiveness or the presence of jealousy does not automatically classify people into a specific kingdom. What we need to examine is what is at the depth or the core experience of that person and not at the level of expression. So when you go really into the depth of that person, then the language that they will speak at that level is fundamentally important. And this, of course, is the depth to which you are able to take a case. So a hyoscyamus person will say, yes, I'm jealous. I feel always, you know, suspicious of my partner, etc. But when you go into the depth of that patient's experience, what you will experience is fright, fear, such tremendous fear to be alone. It is out of this tremendous fear to be alone that he really holds on to the partner and becomes extremely suspicious of the partner and becomes jealous and becomes shameless and becomes attractive, not out of a sense of competition, but out of a deep sense of fear, a deep sense of fright. And this sense of fear or fright is a very, very basic expression of the Solanaceae family, like Stramonium has that same fear to be alone and dark. Belladonna has the same fear. Capsicum, tabacum, all these remedies, you will experience the same, what we call as the flight or fright reaction. And that is fundamental to hyoscyamus. So at a expression level, you will find you will easily confuse between the kingdoms. And that's exactly the reason why I propose what I call as the seven levels of experience. But that means you have the level of pathology, then you have the level of the symptoms, local symptoms, then you have the level of emotions, then you have the level of delusions, and then you have the level of sensation or experience. Further, you have the level of energy, and then you have the level of the witness. So if very important to this sensation method is that one should not stay at the level of emotions or the level of delusions, but take the patient from that level, like for example, emotion or delusion, perception, to his actual experience. And there, the differences between the kingdoms will become quite obvious and clear.
Very interesting. Rajan, you know, one of the new things that you've introduced into homeopathy is the idea of 10 miasms. As I know you are well aware, Hahnemann originally had 3 miasms, and then there was added pseudosora, and then that was then tubercular cancer miasm. So, you know, traditionally we had just 5 miasms, but you actually in your scheme have 10 different miasms. Can you give us a sense of why you're using 10 instead of the original 3 or maybe the more expanded 5 miasms?
Well, initially, when I read about Hahnemann's theory of chronic disease and his proposal of the miasms of psoriasis and syphilis, I actually felt that this was not relevant to homeopathic practice. I felt that this is a theory of Hahnemann. It may be true, it may not be true. His theory was that disease, chronic disease, originated from suppression of specific infection like the itch disease or like the figwort or like syphilis. But I felt, what difference does it make where chronic disease originated from, as long as you are able to find the right remedy for the patient based upon the totality of symptoms. And so for many years, I kept this whole idea of miasms completely out of my field of vision. But when I came to the idea of delusions, which means that the basic problem is how people perceive and react to reality, and that there can be different types of perception, then I found that there are 3 main types of perception. One is that you can see a situation as something hopeful, which can be solved, or you can see a situation as something fixed that cannot be solved, but you can live with it, and then you can see a situation which is hopeless and which is destroying you. So this is how you can see fundamentally any given situation. And when I saw these 3 fundamental types of situation, I felt that this is very, very similar to the idea of psora, psychosis, and syphilis. Traditionally, we know syphilis is the destructive miasm, psychosis is the one that is fixed, and psora is the one that is hopeful, with sulfur being its chief symbol. So I thought, if we have this kind of division, then the idea of miasm becomes practically significant. And we can not only use miasm as a theory of the origin of disease, but also as a classification of different states of being that we in homeopathy call disease. And I said, if we can use these 3 main as classification, can there be other types of reaction or perception possible? And when I started examining, I found that yes, there are many other types also possible. And then I could identify 10 very clearly distinct types of situations and reactions as perceived by an individual. For example, one situation could be where he sees everything in chaos and he has to really go out of his capacity, really exert so much in order to bring order again. And this also is a mammoth task. This type of perception and reaction would be like a person having cancer, where we go from pillar to post trying to find an order in the situation, where cancer itself as a disease is something where something becomes chaotic and out of order and out of control. So when we see chaos, loss of control, disorder, and superhuman effort to bring back order again, Then we have another type of perception and reaction, which is the cancer mayasam. And we have the nozode, for which is carcinosin, whose main symptom is that he wants everything very fastidious, everything in order again, everything under control, his emotions, his body, everything needs to be under very strict control. We have the symptomatology. And all the remedies which we can classify in the cancer miasm, like argentum nitricum, like, so many other staphysagria, all have the theme of control. Staphysagria has to control his anger. Argentum nitricum has to control in a very crisis situation, etc. So we have one more miasm. In this way, I could identify 10 different patterns and I could put remedies under these different patterns and I call them miasm, just like psoriasis, psychosis and syphilis. So now we have typhoid miasm, ringworm miasm, leprous miasm, malarial miasm, cancer miasm, tubercular miasm as additional miasms and the acute miasm. And I found that I could work very beautifully with this classification and it made my remedy selection that much more simpler or easier, and my way of understanding the case became much more clearer. And I've been using this now for more than 20 years and I can tell you it is really invaluable.
Rajan, I'm acquainted with your approach. I've read your books and I know that the idea of kingdoms and miasms is a central part of the concept of how you practice. Can you maybe explain a little bit about how these actual concepts are useful in actual clinical practice?
Well, in earlier days, it was like this, that in a given case with a given symptoms, you know, suppose a patient has thirst for water, desire for sweets, headache in the sun or whatever, as symptoms would come, different remedies would come. And our problem was that if we put a specific set of symptoms into the repertory, it would throw up one remedy, two remedies, three remedies, five remedies. And if we select another set of symptoms, it would throw up another set of remedies. And this would lead to confusion because you don't know what to do then. And Materia Medica also was somewhat confusing because the patient seemed to match some symptoms of a particular remedy and some symptoms of another remedy. So this symptom-based approach was working sometimes, but not very consistent and led to a lot of confusion. And therefore, this other approach, which I started to evolve and adapt in my practice, which I call as a system-based approach, where you don't think straight from symptoms. Okay, he has these three symptoms, what remedy can I think of? But you start thinking, which category can he belong to? Is he a plant? Is he a mineral? Is he an animal? Or which miasm does he belong to? Then your search becomes that much more focused. The other thing, of course, is that you, in cases you do not think like this, you don't think which kingdom he belongs to. This is the wrong way of saying it. It's actually when you go into the depth of his experience, then you automatically see what the core issue is, and he automatically gets classified in one of the three kingdoms and one of the 10 miasms. And then your search can take you straight into a specific category and makes it much more simpler. So instead of considering remedies individually, we classify the remedies into a system. And this division has definitely been very, very useful. It has also opened up a lot of new remedies to us. For example, in plant families, we are not only restricted to I can give you an example. There was this woman with autoimmune hepatitis who was in for a liver transplant because her liver functions were gone totally haywire. And when she came, she described a dream where she had been made into a golden statue. And I said to her, can you describe to me, please, what is the experience to be a golden statue? And she said, I feel stuck, stiff, and I'm unable to move. And I said, how does it feel to be in this position? She said, I felt terribly harassed and terribly disturbed and irritated and persecuted, and I cannot get out of this. So I'm, of course, summarizing a 1.5 hour history and not in 2 minutes. But anyway, now this case, which might be more difficult to solve with symptoms, is easy to solve with this method, because you can see that stuck, stiff, and cannot move is the exact sensation of the family Anacardiaceae, in which Rustox and Anacardium are the main remedies. And I could have given her Rustox, but her miasm was not the miasm of Rustox, which is typhoid miasm, but actually malarial miasm, which has the feeling of being harassed and persecuted. And therefore, I selected for her a remedy from the Anacardiaceae family and the malarial miasm, which is Rusven, and this remedy brought her out completely. Now we have a more than 8-year follow-up. She came out of this entire hepatitis story, her liver functions became normal, and she is leading a totally normal life. So thus you are able to use new remedies, you are able to expand your materia medica. And also, the idea of expanding our materia medica to include the information from the source has been also very, very highly valuable addition in our practice. So for the first time, the compartment of homeopathy, which is limited to proving materia medica repertory and symptoms, opens up, and the entire planet becomes the homeopathic materia medica. And sometimes in cases, we are able to directly go to the source. I want to emphasize that the knowledge of the source is not a substitute, but it's a complement. It is one more way than our known provings and our repertories. And I strongly emphasize that no method in homeopathy can be used in isolation. That is very risky, to put yourself in one bracket. This method gives you one more tool in your repertoire, one more method, one more way in which you are able to come to a remedy along with the other methods. And that's the way it needs to be used. It is an opening, a widening. And with this opening and widening, success rate really jumps up.
Rajan, Hahnemann, in various locations, specifically his 1796 Essays on a New Principle, and also when he describes the remedy Chelidonium, is rather critical of the use of the doctrine of signatures, which is the idea that something about the form or behavior of the substance itself can determine its medicinal properties. He doesn't say that it's completely untrue. He just says that it's not a reliable approach to practice medicine with. And I'm curious, you know, there, certainly many people have claimed that you are a proponent of the doctrine of signatures. You know, that if a patient looks a certain way, like an animal, then he needs that animal. I'm curious, is this accurate, and what is your response to these perceptions about the vital sensation method?
First of all, I must say that I completely agree with Hahnemann, and that the physical appearance of any substance cannot be used as an indication for its therapeutic utility. I know that many people comment about my method that it is based on doctrine of signatures. And they give examples such as that if a person looks like a pig, I would give pig's milk as the remedy. And if I can't find pig's milk, I would give him donkey's milk as a substitute. I think that these kind of comments are based upon hearsay and not anybody who has really pursued my books or my teachings. What I propose is a very, very simple thing, a very logical thing. Let us forget animals for the moment. Let us take minerals and plants. What I'm asking is, instead of looking at rootstock, anacardium, and other plants of anacardiaceae family, or let's say solanaceae, belladonna, hyoscyamus, stramonium, capsicum, mandragora, tabacum, etc., can we not discern a common pattern, a common experience, a common sensation? Is there any homeopath who can deny that there is nothing common between belladonna, stramonium, and hyoscyamus? It's obvious. They are so similar in their effects. So remedies from a given family are very similar. And if we can understand that commonality, we will be able to prescribe so much more easily. In the same way, if you apply the same principle to an animal class, for example, if you start studying reptiles, now we have written a 2-volume book on reptiles. And if you study this book, the depth to which that we have taken it, we start understanding not how a reptile looks, not how it slithers, but how exactly does it survive? It survives by a certain quality. It hides. It is camouflaged. It attacks in a very deceitful way. It attacks in a very surprised way. Now, are these not exactly the qualities of lachesis that we know in our Materia Medica? The quality of lying, the quality of deceitfulness, the quality of attacking, the quality of surprise, the trickery, the sharp tongue. In fact, so much so, lachesis has a symptom in the Materia Medica, tongue darts in and out like a snake, you know. So exact is the quality of the snake in a human being, but not superficially. He's not going to look like a snake or wear a snakeskin suit or carry a snakeskin handbag or something like this. But when you look into what is his exact perception and his exact reaction to reality, you will find in that perception and reaction the survival qualities of the reptile. It is at that level that we make a comparison, and not at a superficial appearance level. And that comparison is so accurate and so beautiful that one only has to see in order to know. And one cannot be convinced by mere talk like the one I am doing right now. So my appeal to the community is to read my works carefully before making any conclusions or assumptions that it is based on doctrine of signatures. That is the most superficial comment that is possible.
Well, I think that's a very fair comment, that people shouldn't judge somebody without actually having studied their works directly and making their own assessment. So I 100% agree with you about that.
Not only to study the work, Kim, but apply it in your practice.
I agree,
Hanuman,
100%. You know, you should.
It's like
what Herring said. You know, why did Herring believe in homeopathy? Because he had the integrity in himself to test it to see that it really did work. He was sent to disprove homeopathy, but he found that it really worked, and he was converted. And I think that you have to approach everything in life in that way. So I 100% agree with you. I'm curious though. Do you feel, Rajan, that your approach can be misapplied or misinterpreted?
Absolutely. Not only it can be, it is. Everything is misapplied and misinterpreted in the world. Materia Medica is misapplied. Repertory is misapplied. I'm sure books like Essences and Keynotes are also misinterpreted and misapplied. Because when is something misapplied or misinterpreted is when it is done superficially. So that is the whole thing, that when somebody comes and says, I feel I am tied and caught, and how does it feel? I don't feel free. And how does it to be free? It's like a bird. I want to fly like a bird. And you immediately say, this is a bird remedy. It doesn't work. Or you say, I like a cat very much. I feel close to a cat. So it's a cat remedy. No, these are very superficial. One has to go into the experience. What is the experience to be like a bird? What is the experience to fly? And then he will take you to a completely different experience. And that's where we have to be very vigilant and very, very careful. And any superficial application without proper knowledge, without proper training, without proper education and reading is going to be disastrous.
Rajan, if people want to find out more about the vital sensation method, they want to study with you, or what avenues would you say are available to people?
I would put it that they should go to my website, www.rajansankaran.com or www.onlinehmp.com, where they will get information about my online course, which is called Wednesdays with Rajan, where they'll get information about the seminar in Toronto, which I very, very strongly recommend, especially to more experienced practitioners, that this will be the best seminar ever. So please do come, because I'm going to give case after case without any pre-selection, just one after the other. So you can see the entire variety of practice, and you can see how I use both very well-known remedies and very rare remedies at the same time, where I'm not limited by anyone, by the traditional or by the new approach, and I use them in sync and integrated with each other, which is really the need of the hour. And the last thing I want to mention is that we are about to launch in June the International Academy of Classical Homeopathy, because I'm convinced that clinical training is what is really needed. And people can come to the academy and watch us practice live every single day for a month or 6 months as they choose. And they can see case after case and the results of these cases. It will be very open and you can learn the method exactly. So I do refer you to the website www.theothersong.com, and this will give you information about the academy.
Fantastic. I just want to reiterate, I was actually at the Goa conference just recently, just a couple of months ago, and it was an 8-day conference, and for me the highlight was actually the last day, where Rajan did exactly what he's going to be doing in Toronto, which was essentially just having a videotape of, was it just one day in your practice, or was it taken from a few different days?
No, it was just half a day in my practice.
It was a half a day in your practice. And I found it absolutely fascinating because, as Dr. Sankaran just mentioned, there was a whole variety of different cases. Sometimes when you go to these conferences, you know, and very strange remedies are being presented, you get the sense that, you know, every patient who comes in gets, you know, Venus Ray or some other very unusual remedy. But it was, you know, it was very interesting. The first case was a lac caninum case, and then the next case was a tarantula case, and then a sulfur case, and then a calcarea case, and then I think there was another calcarea case, and then there was a lower serasus case. So they were, it was very much actually the way I see in my own practice, or what I see in other practitioners as well. And it was absolutely fascinating. Besides the fact that he's an excellent presenter and was quite humorous. So I totally enjoyed that day. And if the Toronto seminar is going to be anything like that, you're in for a real treat. So, again, if you want more information, you can visit his website, www.rajansankaran.com. There's also another website, www.onlinehmp.com. We only have maybe a minute or two for questions. I'm going to open up the lines and see if there are any questions that anybody would like to ask Dr. Sankaran.
Sit down. I have a question.
Please go ahead.
you find a remedy with the sensation method, have you ever had a patient who needed another remedy in the future that you came to also using the sensation method? In other words, can one have more than one vital sensation?
Did you hear the question,
yes,
Rajan?
Yes, yes, I got the question, and the answer is yes, but it is qualified that at a given time, there is only one sensation in one state. When you treat that state with a given remedy, it can happen sometimes, though not very often, that the patient, after a few months or in a chronic case, can describe a different state, a different experience, and he needs a different remedy. So this is possible, but only one at a time.
Okay, I think we have time maybe for one more question.
I have a
question.
Go ahead, please.
Regarding the case you mentioned of Rush Spinata, is it possible if you do not know a remedy, if it's quite rare and you have no information about it and that's what the patient needs, you can get to healing, a higher level of health by using special remedies?
Well, the answer is that when we give very, very well-known remedies only, then it is possible that we are not exactly at the point and the result can be somewhat partial or even temporary. But when we are able to select a more accurate, a more focused remedy based on the idea of kingdoms and miasms or on specific characteristic symptoms or rubrics, the result will be that much more significant, long-lasting, and complete.
Fantastic. Okay, I see we're out of time. I'm going to unmute the lines, and if we can give Dr. Rajan Sankaran a very warm North American thank you. He's very busy writing his books and teaching and practicing, so let's give him a very big North American
thank you.
Thank you, Rajan.
Thank you.
Wonderful
talk.
Awesome.
All right, and have a good night, everybody. And good morning to you, Rajan.
Good morning.
Bye, everyone.